This week's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/hype. Welcome to Hype Episode 15. Josh, Kyle, and I here this week. No ladies, just a three-some show. Three-hosts show. A trio.
Just the boys.
Yeah, well, Selena is busy with school, and a few of the Hype ladies are all at New York Comic Con, covering the con for us. There's actually, it's funny, San Diego Comic-Con has always been the big con, and slowly but surely, New York Comic-Con is growing quickly. New York Comic-Con used to be like the early days of San Diego Comic-Con, where it was all just comics, and now it's getting more pop culture-y. There's Once Upon a Time is doing something there at New York Comic-Con, the Vampire Academy, I think Walking Dead. It's becoming more and more like San Diego.
That's crazy. Yeah. It's grown like 10% from last year alone, I think.
Yeah. Laura heard that stat. I personally will always remain loyal to San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There's no way New York Comic-Con will ever be as cool as San Diego Comic-Con.
And then yet Laura posted a status going how these Comic-Con days are the best days of a year. And I'm like, interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, she's a New Yorker, New Jerseyan, so she's like legally obligated to lean towards New York Comic-Con. And as Kyle and I are Californians, we are legally obligated to worship San Diego Comic-Con. No, but truly, San Diego Comic-Con is better. But hey, that's, you know, whatever. I'm glad seriously, like, even up until like 2 years ago, the big star of every New York Comic-Con was that Marvel dude. What's his name, Josh?
Marvel dude?
The old guy.
Stanley.
Oh, Stanley.
Yeah. That one old guy.
Sorry.
Yeah.
He's there like every year, and he used to be like the one star guest in here.
Yeah, he's a fame war.
Yeah.
No, he's great.
Yeah, no, he seems like a cool guy. I always laugh out loud when I see his cameos in the Marvel movies.
I know. I was just watching some the other day, and I saw him cameo. Might have been Spider-Man.
New one. Has there been a supercut of that? Yeah, like all of Stan Lee's Marvel appearances?
I'm sure there are. Yeah, I'm sure someone's done it.
Well, we got a lot of movie and television news to talk about today. We're going to start with television news. And it's a real shame that Selena is not on today's episode, because the Rupert Grint CBS comedy pilot was released on CBS.com earlier this week. Now, you may remember that this show, it stars Rupert Grint and Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry plays Rupert's characters as butler. And CBS didn't pick it up. They didn't even air it on television. For whatever reason, they just decided that this show was not for them. And but for some reason, they released the pilot online. Josh and I both saw it. What do you think of it, Josh?
I actually thought it was pretty decent. It was obviously, you know, a little cheese-tastic, but I thought it was. I've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I really thought it was better than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, like, interesting.
I've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after it airs, and like, I'll watch it and then I'll turn away, and I'll watch it and I'll turn away. But like, this episode for Rupert's show, I was like, I just watched the whole thing, and maybe it's because it's shorter, but it just felt like there was a nice, you know, beginning and end. And I thought the pilot was pretty well made, you know, for what it was.
It was funny. The premise is, and heartwarming, the premise is that Rupert's character and his brother and sister inherit a lot of money from their uncle, and who invented
Silly Putty.
Silly Putty, yeah.
So what?
Yeah, so the brother and sister are wasting their money away on stupid things like food and liposuction while continuing to eat food. And the brother pays for like this dancer who he's obsessed with.
YouTube dancer.
Yeah, yeah. And Rupert's character, Clyde, the show is called Super Clyde. He's a good person. He doesn't want to waste his money like his siblings did. So he's trying to figure out what to do with the money. And the family butler tells him that his uncle with all his money would leave the money laying around town in wallets, and whoever would call and turn the wallet back in would be rewarded with a gift, something that they really needed. So Rupert's character, Clyde, thinks that this can be his superpower. He can be like a superhero because he loves comics. And so he turns into a real life superhero by making people's lives better. And judging by the pilot, it looks like what was going to happen was each episode would feature one superhero moment from Clyde. Yeah.
Basically, Clyde just gives stuff away every week.
Yeah. But it's a heartwarming.
It felt great.
So, yeah. Rupert Grint is kind of like Oprah.
Yeah, exactly.
He's Oprah.
Actually, and he does give her a car, the character in the pilot, a car. So, you get a car.
Time to see her family.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. It was actually really good. And looking at the comments here on Hypeable, everybody seems to be in agreement that it was a great pilot. I mean, it certainly should have went to air at least.
Yeah.
You know, time would have told.
Since they just canceled that other one they picked up.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. They CBS has the title of second comedy canceled of the season. First was ABC's Lucky Seven, and the second comedy was We Are Men, which is a CBS comedy. So, of course, people are now saying, oh, well, why did they even waste their time airing We Are Men? They canceled it so quick. It only aired two episodes. Yet they have this great Rupert Grint pilot on their hands. I'm wondering.
The built-in fan base.
Right. Yeah. Every Harry Potter fan would have checked it out.
Yep, yeah. I'm wondering why did they put it online if they weren't going to air it? Like, oh, we're not going to give this to you, but here you go anyway.
Well, that's what has me wondering. I'm wondering if they were on the fence about it. They decided not to go with it. And then they decided, let's put it online, see what the reaction is. I have to think that if there's enough positive buzz, they'll consider ordering more episodes or a full season, right? Because like
you would think,
or at least
shop it to someone else.
That would make the most sense.
Yeah, I think this could do very well on Netflix, considering Rupert Grint's audience is young adults and people even younger, a internet savvy audience who would tune in to Netflix for this. And Netflix is eagerly always looking for shows to pick up. They were trying to pick up the Breaking Bad spinoff from stealing it away from ABC or AMC.
And they tried to pick up Terra Nova whenever that Fox sci-fi had gone on.
Yeah, so who knows? Maybe there some Netflix networks got to look at this and be like, okay, we want this.
Netflix must be like the new hope for all canceled TV shows. All the fans are just going to be like, Netflix, please take our show.
Right. Save it. Save Rupert. And I just thought, I've been saying this since they cast Stephen Fry. I mean, what a great idea to put Rupert Grint and Stephen Fry together in a half-hour comedy. I mean,
and what's so hilarious is that Rupert has American accent during the scenes.
How is that accent?
It's actually not terrible.
Yeah.
It's better than I thought.
Yeah.
But it's weird to see him talking to Fry and him having a British accent and Rupert not having one.
Right. Well, the stereotypical butler has to have a British accent. And actually, concerning Rupert's acting, I thought it was really good. I've been vocal.
It was just nice to see him. You know what I mean? It was.
Yeah. Because he's been in a couple movies, but nothing big like Emma and Dan have been in post-Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I've been vocal about my dislike for Rupert's acting. I was never blown away by it in Harry Potter. Maybe it was just the way they wrote the character. But in this, I actually really liked his acting. So Selena would be proud.
I would have to take a look now because I'm on the same. I'm on the fence.
Well, I think like you'll like it, Kyle. I think you'd like it a lot.
Yeah, everybody should watch it. It's on CBS's website. Apparently, it's only U.S. only. But if you're outside the U.S., you look around the internet, I'm sure there's a copy sitting somewhere online. And it's only 22 minutes, so it's easy to get through.
Yep.
Let us know what you think. Hit the comments of this podcast post. Share your thoughts or our original article on Hypeable about the pilot being released. And some other TV news, Josh actually just mentioned Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's been picked up for a full season, which I didn't realize it wasn't. So,
yeah.
Congrats, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I guess the original pickup order was for 12, and then now it's 22.
Oh, is that what it was?
I would assume so. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they were filming a bunch of episodes, so they must have had a decent order originally. It's been doing well. The premiere episode, when it premiered in September, it was the
11.4 million.
Yeah, and it was the highest rated drama debut in nearly 4 years since November 2009. And it was the number one new show of the 2013-2014 season. And the reason is obvious. It's a Marvel television show. There's a lot of anticipation. It's kind of an Avengers spinoff of sorts.
Yeah.
Do you like it? You said you watched it in the background, sort of, Josh?
I just can't, like, keep my attention on it. It feels like, I don't know if the hour's too long for what they're doing, but it just doesn't feel, it's not exactly what I was hoping for. And it's not that I was expecting, like, you know, movie-worthy, you know, CGI and stuff like that. I mean, you're bound to get, you know, less or lower quality stuff like that for TV. But it's just not, the characters are so one-dimensional. It's like you have Clark Gregg, and then you have everyone else who's basically just come out of acting school, apparently, and they can't do, but, you know, one, you know, it's just tough. Hopefully they improve over time. They have no chemistry, like, the actors have no chemistry together.
Coworkers were talking about it yesterday in the break room, and they're just like, S.H.I.E.L.D. sucks. And I'm like, ooh, yikes. So I'm hoping it gets better.
Go ahead. I tried to watch it, and I couldn't really get into it either. I want to. I like Marvel movies. I like Joss Whedon, so this should have been a easy one for me to get into, but I too have not been blown away.
I'd much rather watch Firefly than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
With that said, we have a few hypeable writers who are loving Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So there are people who love it. Go ahead, Josh.
I was just going to say, like, the two scientists, Fitzsimmons, they basically call him, like, one name in the show, Fitzsimmons, instead of, you know, the two separate names. And I'm like, why would they do this? You know, they're basically like one character because they're exactly the same.
Mm. Yeah, well, we'll see how it does. I mean, ABC's obviously feeling confident in it, so that's good. And obviously, a lot of people are into the show. I'm going to stick with it. I saw a couple of tweets earlier this week that this most recent episode, the show may have finally hit its stride, I think, in the words of somebody on Twitter. So I'll give it a couple more tries, but got too many other shows to watch.
I'll keep DVRing it and not watching and just listening.
We're going to continue with the news in just a moment, but first, it's time to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of Hype, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. My recommendation for this week is a recommendation I'm going to talk about more later in this show. But for now, the choice is Fangirl by Rainbow Roll. Now, this book was recommended to me by a Hypeable writer, Marima, who read it and interviewed the author. Her interview is actually on Hypeable right now, if you search for it. The book is about a girl who writes fan fiction. And this may be sounding familiar to you already as somebody deeply involved in fandom. She's a fan fiction writer and very passionate about a certain fantasy series, a fantasy series about a character called Simon Snow. So she writes fan fiction about him. And she goes off to college and wants to continue pursuing her love for fan fiction and Simon Snow. And she struggles with that, balancing the new college life with her fangirl life. And she also has to introduce this fangirl life to her new friends that she's meeting in college. So I'm about a little under halfway through reading it, really enjoying it. I highly recommend it. It is the perfect book for people involved in online fandom. So check it out. You can listen to it for absolutely free. Audiblepodcast.com/hype. And we thank Audible for their support of the show. Another TV news, Kyle, you've been watching Sleepy Hollow, and that was renewed?
Yeah, that was renewed for a second season after only 3 episodes. Nice. And it's the first TV show of the fall season to get renewed, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So
what's the basic premise?
The basic premise is that Ichabod Crane, character from Washington Irving's Sleeping Hollow story, was actually a fighter in the Civil War. He gets hurt, and then his witch of a wife puts him to sleep for 250 years, and he wakes up in Sleepy Hollow 250 years later, but so does the Headless Horseman that he had just killed. So now him and the lieutenant that found him are prophesized to fight a war against the apocalypse for 7 years. So it's about how they're going to fight against all these demons and stuff. It's pretty cool.
So wait, you said for the next 7 years?
Yes, that's the prophecies, is that they're supposed to be fighting for 7 years. So I would assume that the show is supposed to be running for 7 years.
Yeah, okay. See, that I find that interesting because I feel like too often these shows premiere and don't really have a plan for what to do long term. I like the idea of how this show is thinking, okay, we can do 7 seasons of this. And that's a long time for a show, especially these days when it seems like shows get dropped so easily. So that's cool. I like that.
Yeah, and it's really funny because he wakes up and 250 years later, he has no idea how to work a shower. It's great.
They put little notes like on things like do this for coffee, stuff like that.
That's it was one of the most anticipated pilots, and you either hated it or loved it.
We're also covering it fully on Hypeable now, offering full coverage. By the way, quick thing about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. getting picked up for the full season. I just looked it up. It had they had ordered 22 minus 9 equals 13. So they had ordered 13 episodes. Then this full season order was the additional 9, bringing it up to 22.
Ah, okay.
Just some little factual
details. They've dropped like 10% for the first 2 weeks, I think.
Ratings-wise, yeah. But we'll hold out hope.
Yep.
Kyle's done 2 pretty fun things in the past couple of weeks here in California. First was, I don't have it in our rundown, but you went to ABC Studios here in Los Angeles and watched the first 2 episodes of Once Upon a Time.
Mm-hmm.
And then talked with the showrunners afterwards. And funny side note, if you follow us follow me on Twitter or Facebook, we should mention it on the Hypeable social media somewhere, but Kyle's review got a shout out on a commercial for Once Upon a Time last night on ABC,
which blew like all of our minds.
Everyone's mind. Seeing Hypeable's name on ABC television. The review, it was just those commercials where they show some quick reviews of a television show or a movie. Kyle said, "Great twists."
This is perfect.
Yep, yeah, exactly that way too.
Sure, great twist. So that was a fun surprise, and they obviously did that because we went to that press event, which was very cool. So good job there. So that episode hasn't aired yet, or it has?
No, those 2 episodes have now aired.
Okay,
it aired last Sunday. They do this all the time. Like, they edit it out and stuff. So, like, my review said, these 2 episodes are filled with great twists. And then they just go, this season is full of great twists. And
right.
Like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And then you went to Pixar last week. It was our first trip to Pixar, officially.
I know. It was so awesome.
And your personal first trip to first for any staff member.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So and what was it like stepping onto the Holy Land?
Well, I arrived an hour early because I live an hour away. And so I left 2 hours early so that I can get there on time with traffic. Yeah. And I got there and he's like, oh, they're not expecting you for another hour. So come back. And I'm like, I come back. And then he goes, welcome to Pixar, Hypeable. And I'm like, it was so great. Yeah. And like everything there is Monsters University themed at the moment because they themed their entire campus around the new movie that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they had Monsters University gates leading up into the pathway. And then like,
so cool.
They had like Greek fraternity signs up right. all over the banners on the roofs as if like you're going to Monsters University. It was pretty sick.
That's awesome. I would love to go. I wonder what they're going to do for the next year now that I guess you're just going to pull decorations down, because we also found out that Pixar is delaying The Good Dinosaur to 2015 and pushing the Finding Nemo sequel, Finding Dory, to 2016. So yeah. 2004 will be the first year, or sorry, 2014 will be the first year since 2005, since there's been a year with no Pixar movie.
You know, the coolest thing though was the when we took a tour, they've tour specific areas, and then there are doors behind the scenes that you can't go. Like it, they say it's a closed set, which is so weird. And I peeked down one of the closed set doors, and I saw the storyboards. I think I couldn't tell if it was for The Good Dinosaur or Finding Nemo, but I saw actual storyboards, and I'm like,
damn, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. They call them closed sets. I mean, it makes sense because they do all their development. They plan out the entire movie, start to finish, top to bottom, before animating it. So
yeah,
that's very cool. Very cool. So So Toy Story Terror, Kyle and I have both seen it now. It airs on ABC October 16th. It's a Halloween special. And now I know Kyle loved it, but I have to say I didn't like it as much as I was hoping I would. It just seems like the Toy Story, it has a plot point that's so similar to Toy Story 2. It almost feels like it's a rejected Toy Story 2 plot line that they just dug up and decided to use. And it also just didn't seem very Halloween-y to me, which is something I was expecting, because they're calling it a Halloween special and it's called Toy Story of Terror. And it's just...
Really?
Yeah.
I totally got the Halloween vibe, because they have like, you know, they have a scary like movie in it, and then they have like jumps and claw yeah. marks and stuff. So I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool.
I guess I was just expecting like life in this world that we were watching would have been decorated for Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know how Christmas specials, it's snowing and there's Christmas lights and all that stuff. For this... And like the Charlie Brown, the classic Charlie Brown Halloween special. It's Halloween. There's pumpkins and stuff. There's none of that here. It just didn't feel like a Toy Story special.
That would actually make more sense to make them more scared because it's Halloween time. They're like,
Yeah. But in your interview with the showrunners that you did at Pixar, they said that they purposely, it was scarier, and then they took out some of the scariness.
Yeah. Yeah. So John Lasseter told them, nope, can't do this. You have to take some of this out. And so I almost asked them what they had to take out, but some other reporter asked the question and then I forgot. So, but yeah, I want to know what they added to make it too scary, because at this point it's not that scary at all.
Yeah, they must have been thinking about it from a kid perspective. So I'm sure to us, it may not have been very scary things, but I guess to like 10-year-olds, it would be.
Yeah, that's true.
Kyle was scared.
Yeah. Oh, a little bit. I jumped a couple times. No joke.
Yeah, they're actually, I was watching it with somebody, and they jumped too during one point.
That's funny.
And I was like, really? At least that's what I thought.
I never jump at that stuff.
Really? Not even like major
motion
pictures?
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, I'll go to the movies with my brothers and stuff, and they'll jump, and I never jump. And I don't know if I just don't have like that.
Do you not have a soul?
I don't have a soul or something.
So, yeah, check it out. I mean, it's good. If you like, it's nice to see the toys again. The last movie came out in, what, 2010? So it's nice to see them all back, and some great lines. It's definitely worth checking out. I mean, it's only a half hour, so. And finally, the last TV item we're going to talk about for today before moving on to some movie stuff, including Catching Fire, Fantastic Beasts, and Fault in Our Stars, is... about the Corey Monteith tribute that aired on Fox last night, the special Glee episode. Ratings wise, it did very well. 75% higher ratings than last week's episode, which was part two of Beatles tribute. Yeah. So they almost doubled their ratings.
Did you see it, Andrew?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to get in on all the anticipation. It was good. I don't watch Glee much anymore, so from the perspective of a regular Glee viewer, I cannot rate it, and I know neither... Did you see it yet, Kyle?
Yes, I did. Oh, yeah,
oh okay.
I, I cried like 8 times, maybe 10. No joke. Like every scene, I would stop crying, and then the next scene would be almost just as emotional, and then I'd start crying. There's only one scene that isn't as emotional, and I feel like fans are gonna yell at me, but like Puck's scene, Puck is not, at least in that specific scene, maybe he was stressed out or something, but the acting in that scene was terrible. Like,
I agree.
Horrible.
I thought the same thing.
I think I read
thing.
That in the comments. Yeah, I said that. Yeah,
I was talking to my friend about that. I don't know, what was he just out of his element maybe during that scene, or it was bizarre. I mean, there was two scenes actually where he features that I thought he kind of stunk in. Are you talking about, which one were you talking about, in the locker room
specifically? Yeah, the locker room scene.
Okay,
with Beast. That killed me. I was like, ooh, that's awkward.
Beast was great though.
Oh yeah, everyone, almost everyone else in the series was fantastic.
Yeah, the songs were also good, and I maybe teared up lately a little bit, but I got chills during the scene where Finn's parents are talking.
That is the most emotional one.
Yeah,
I think, of the entire episode.
Yeah, because his mom, what's the mom's character's name?
Carol.
Carol. Yeah, she. I felt like that line was really, her lines were really coming from the heart. The acting there was superb. It just felt so real to me. And honestly, probably one of the most real moments on television I've seen, because it was real. I mean, they're working with real emotions during these scenes. The songs
were
really good.
Everyone's face when they're like singing, and it's like,
yeah.
You can like tell they're not acting. They're just like legitimately just sad.
Yeah.
I didn't see the episode, but I listened to some of the songs on Hypeable, and like Leah's song, you could like hear her crying during the song. So it's like, you know, that's real. You know what I mean? And I don't know that that's ever happened on television, you know, where you have these people that are really reacting to the devastation.
Yeah. Real relationship there behind the scenes. I liked how Rachel didn't come in towards the end until the end. I thought that was good to
Rachel.
Sort of,
sorry, that's what I meant.
Yeah. To sort of build up a little anticipation around her character, how her character would act. And the storyline with the jacket, I thought, well, I don't want to spoil it. But I thought that was okay. I don't know if it really.
The only good thing that came out of it was the end. With Will.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that was emotional, but
and then what about Santana with the fight with Sue?
Oh, I loved Santana's fight with Sue. Like, that was great.
Yeah,
it was finally time someone told her off, and then Sue was like, "Oh, dang it."
Now I wonder if that will play out in future episodes. I feel like it won't, because Santana's now leaving the school, and that really only happened between them and.
And I feel like they're, as Glee normally does, they're going to forget that entire plot line or conversation that they had and then continue. And Sue's going to be as mean as ever.
The episode, I'm sure, will be debated and analyzed for years to come, because it's always a big deal in the television world. And in school, when you study television, you talk about episodes of real deaths. I mean, I always think about the death of John Ritter. He was filming a show called Your Teenage Daughter. Something about Your Teenage Daughter.
I hate Simple Rules, man.
Eight Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. Yeah. Which, after he died, they changed the title to Eight Simple Rules. And it was still a good show post-death, by the way. But he was the lead character in it. So him dying really changed the show, and they had to revamp it.
That was a fantastic episode.
Yes.
When they had to grieve that. I loved that show at the time. So
yeah, me too. It was really good. And they tackled his death. I think they said he in the storyline that he died of a heart attack, which is what really happened to actor in real life. Whereas with Finn, it's they don't say how he died. And Kurt even addresses that towards the beginning of the episode. He says something like, "I everybody's asking how he died, but all I want to talk about is how he lived," which I thought was cool.
Nice way to divert the attention.
Yeah, and it makes sense.
Did they have any sort of like drug, you know, prevention things?
Oh,
no, not in the episode, but afterwards. They had
afterwards,
like a PSA.
That's what I meant.
Yeah,
good. Yeah, I mean, at least they did that. I mean, it is important to, you know, get the word out.
So our Glee podcast, Glee Chat, does have a brand new episode out talking about the episode. We also have a recap on Hypeable. We also have all the PSAs. We have all the video the songs in video form. Those are up on the site. So everything concerning the episode, recap, in-depth podcast, all on Hypeable right now if you want to get more analysis of that episode. Moving on now to some movie talk. This excited me, and people need to get more excited about this, so everybody pay attention. Everybody remembers Emma Watson starred in The Perks of Being a Wallflower last year. It was based on the book by Stephen Chbosky. Stephen Chbosky wrote the screenplay for the movie and directed the movie. So the book and movie are both his baby. And Stephen Chbosky and Emma Watson are now reteaming for a new adaptation for a book called 29 by Adina Halpern. And the title of the movie for now is While We're Young. And it centers on three women in a family. There's Ellie, who's 75 years old, and for her birthday wishes to be 29 years old again for one day. That's the age of her granddaughter, who she gets along with better than her real daughter, who's 55. So her birthday wish is magically granted, and for a day, she's 29 again with her 29-year-old granddaughter. Now, it's not clear what role Emma Watson's going to play, if she's going to play the granddaughter or the 75-year-old woman after she turns into a 29-year-old. Mm-hmm. But the other big news about this story is that Michael H. Weber and Scott Neustadter, they are a writing team who wrote The Spectacular Now, starring Shailene Woodley, 500 Days of Summer, and The Fault in Our Stars, which is currently filming now.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah, these two guys are hot right now. I mean, all three of these films are... we haven't seen Fault in Our Stars, but presumably it's going to be fantastic.
Great, yeah.
it's great. Emma Watson's teaming up with Chbosky again. And I like that she's doing this because Chbosky's not very Hollywood. He's a very humble guy. He's only done his first movie was his own movie. So they must have had a really good relationship on The Perks of Being a Wallflower set. And
I like when actors and directors like get back together, because I feel like they've already created this relationship. And you saw that with Johnny Depp and what's his name? The director.
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton, sorry. Yeah, yeah. And a lot of times their best work comes from, when they have these great relationships with the directors. So I think it'll be good if she sticks with this guy. It'll be good.
Yeah. And speaking of reteaming, Jennifer Lawrence and Gary Ross are reportedly reteaming for a movie. Another book-to-film adaptation, I believe.
Yep.
We reported on that earlier this week. So everybody should look forward to that. The book has a 4.5-star review on Amazon currently, so I'll probably check it out.
I want to know if they're going to put any makeup effects on Emma to make her look older, because she gets mistaken for a 15-year-old quite often. So
yeah,
that's an interesting development if she's going to pay someone who's 29.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how.
I don't know. I've seen some 29-year-olds that look like Emma's age.
Oh yeah, that's true.
That's true.
Truth. But you're right. She still does look fairly young.
So we'll keep everybody updated on that because we're all excited about that. Then some other book to movie news. Fox shocked the world last weekend when they announced that The Maze Runner, their book to film adaptation of the book of the same name by James Dashner, it was set for release this February, but they've delayed it till September. So now there's an 11-month wait for this movie. There's no official reason why, but there hasn't been a trailer for this movie. I don't think there's been posters. There's been a couple photos.
Yeah. There's barely been anything ever.
They seem to have just run into a problem with finishing the movie or how to market it, because they should have had all that stuff out by now. So I think they just realized that they're not in a good place with the movie right now, and they're going to wait a little while longer. But the good news on that front is that yesterday we found out they are developing the sequel already. The Scorch Trials. That's the sequel book by James Dashner.
Well, let's just hope it doesn't run into the same issue as City of Bones. And
right. They
say we're going to do the sequel, and then they're like, no, never mind.
Yeah, it seems to be a trend right
yeah.
now.
I mean, the good news is that, Fox must think highly of The Maze Runner, but then again, like Kyle just brought up.
It's kind of like a marketing ploy. It's like, we think this one's going to be great, so we're going to have right. a sequel. You know what I mean? And yeah. it's like, we have to see the first one, because it's going to be, they're already doing the second.
Fox is taking a lot of jumps in faith recently with, like, Sleepy Hollow and now Maze Runner. It's like, Jesus.
Well, they're different. I think they're, they're different departments. But yeah, I see
like,
what you
as
mean.
As a company, like, it's just, it's interesting to see them just jump onto the next one.
Yeah. But there are cases.
They're pretty known for, like, you know, jumping off of stuff pretty quick.
There are cases of that kind of thing succeeding. A recent example is Orange is the New Black, the Netflix show. They renewed it for a second season before they released the episodes. And when it happened, everybody was like, wait, what? Why are they doing this? And, like Kyle just suggested, it came off as a marketing ploy. But then Orange is the New Black came out, and everybody loved it. So there are cases where the studios make this decision and it works. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also in Fox News, they announced a release date for The Fault in Our Stars, which everybody's looking forward to. The movie is going to be coming out June 6th, 2014, which is sooner than I expected. I actually thought they were going to save it till fall, but that spot ended up going to The Maze Runner. So, and speaking of that, I went on to the set of The Fault in Our Stars, got to interview John Green and the cast members, saw them.
Photobombed a picture.
Photobombed a pic. It was excellent.
He seems like one of the coolest dudes I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, his videos are great.
Yeah. The cool thing, I can't really talk about it much, but now that there's a release date, we'll probably be able to release. I'm going to release multiple set reports for this because we got a ton of interview material. And John Green, especially, I think he spoke to us for a good at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half in two separate interviews.
Wow.
Yeah. He was
That's
just,
awesome.
He was really cool about it. So, that stuff will probably come out late spring, I think, maybe early summer.
Don't you love it when they just talk and they're not, like, avoiding your questions?
Yeah, and that's the good thing about set visits in general is because it's more relaxed. Like, I hate red carpets because everything's rushed, everything's just loud, and it's just a mess. Whereas
the publicist is tapping him on the shoulders.
Right, exactly. The junkets and the set visits, they're much more relaxed, especially if you have one-on-one interviews. So it went very well, and everybody will hear a lot of good stuff when we can release the set report.
And he seems really excited about his transition into film. You know, it just seems like a lot of them are kind of nervous about moving their material into film, but he just seems like he's ready for it.
Well, he just has like a fantastic director who's just super chill. Like, hang out. Like, he has nothing to do with it, but like, I love the fact that like Josh Boone is just like, come on, John, like we want your opinion
I like that
on
a
this.
Lot.
It's great.
Yeah. And Josh Boone stuck in love, which I think we've talked about before. That was his first movie. It actually just was released on iTunes. You can buy it now. It is really good. And I mean that sincerely. There are a few times that I actually enjoy seeing a movie a second or third time, but I saw this movie twice and I loved it both times. So definitely check it out. Stuck in Love, it's called. Okay, so on to some Harry Potter news now. Harry Potter spinoff news. Just a little interview bit from Dan Radcliffe, who was asked about returning to Fantastic Beasts, which anybody who knows about this project knows that Harry Potter's character really doesn't belong in Fantastic Beasts. But he was asked about it, and he said, you know, I would never say never to returning to Harry Potter, even though it's very clear he doesn't want to based on interviews in the past. He said that he wouldn't rule it out because Joe is a great writer. And then he was asked, well, how could Harry return? And he said, well, maybe if time travel rears its head again, I'll be intrigued to see what she does. That's a quote. So he's kind of leaving the possibility open.
You know, I would, at this point, actually agree with Dan with not coming back to the series just because I feel like he looks a little too old to be playing a schoolboy. If he does come back, personally speaking, I would rather see him as he's like raising his kids, like reading Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them to his kids or something, where as opposed to like being a student again, or maybe being an R or something. I do not want to see him as a student just because I feel like that would ruin the image a little bit. But that's just me.
No, I agree. I don't think he should play a student either. What if Fantastic Beasts starts out with him reading the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Him book to his kids?
I think that would be like adorable.
Once upon a time. Flashback.
Do you think they would do
years.
That though? I
no.
just feel like they're wanting to
no,
get like a
all.
Totally new franchise going.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
They don't want that people to associate it with Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, I think they don't want anything to do with Daniel Radcliffe, which is odd, but I just don't think they yeah. want anything to do with him.
Well, yeah, it just makes sense. And if you think about how this story is going to be set, what is it, 70 years, 90 years before Harry's story, it just logically doesn't add up. There's no way for Harry to appear, and there's no reason for Newt to take a time turner and go forward in time and and talk to Harry. It's just no reason.
And it's like, as a publicist, I wouldn't want Daniel Radcliffe on my movie if we know he doesn't want to be on it, and then he's like, oh yeah, I'll be on this, I guess. You yeah. know, like,
right.
It's not something that you want.
Well, I think he just would take away from like the main focus, which should be on, you know, the new characters.
Yeah, launching a new character.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because this is supposed to be a new franchise.
And plastering their face over everything and not dance.
Yeah, on everything.
But with that said, apparently Dumbledore could come back because David Heyman was asked at a recent event promoting Gravity, which we'll talk about in a little bit, by the way.
As long as it's not the actor from the movies, I'm fine with that.
Well, no, he was saying Michael Gambon could come back.
Oh, no.
Well, because if it is, if you think about it, I mean, it makes sense. If Dumbledore is what, like 110 years old in Harry's story, so he would be maybe 40 or 50. So Michael Gambon could play that.
Hmm? But wouldn't they have to like make him look younger? I mean, he got to be younger than that.
That's not hard, though. I mean, look at Gandalf in The Hobbit. Yeah. I mean, nobody's bothered about that.
that's
a prequel.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. That's like difference.
That didn't cross my mind at all.
Yeah,
The Hobbit.
Not once.
But he's
supposed to be like 2,000 years old, I think, so it doesn't really matter.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
1,000, 2,000, same diff.
Yeah.
But like, I just don't think anybody would look at Michael Gambon in this story as Dumbledore and think, oh, he doesn't look young enough. With the right amount of makeup, they can do anything.
That's true.
Well, they made Bilbo look younger in The Hobbit at the very beginning, you know, whenever the old actor was playing.
Yeah, it's totally possible. It's
just as a fan, I think I would rather have someone who knows how to portray Dumbledore better than this guy.
Ooh, I like Michael Gambon.
It's different from the books. So that's just my argument. We don't have to get into a debate about this.
It's okay. I think they need a couple of threads from the Harry Potter movie series to connect it, because from a marketing standpoint, WB is going to want they want this to be a huge new franchise. That's why they're doing it. So they have to draw a couple connections. It's going to look the same, you know, still that Wizarding World. So we'll still have that, and David Heyman's going to produce, which is very good news. But they just need a couple things, and they don't have to be big. So a cameo from Dumbledore, I think, would be very beneficial to connecting it. I'm wondering what the title is going to be too, because you know how with sequels, Harry Potter locked out because all the titles are Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, Harry Potter. Blah, blah, blah. You know, like with the Hunger Games and with Twilight, they call it the Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn, when the book was just called Breaking Dawn. Same thing for Hunger Games; they're calling it the Hunger Games, Catching Fire. I wonder if they'll do like the Wizarding World, Newt Scamander, something like that.
It sounds like a James Bond film.
Yeah. The Wizarding Saga, Newt's Journey. Just something to connect it all and make it.
I feel like you should do voices for trailers.
I wish.
That's what I was about to say.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I have a new career. In a World. If you can do In a World, you can do it all. Okay, so speaking of Hunger Games, let's talk about Catching Fire, which is now just 5 weeks away, 6 weeks away.
I can't believe it's so close.
I know. It's crazy because we've waited, feels like forever since the Hunger Games came out in March 2012. So finally. There was a rupture in the fandom this week when Francis Lawrence was asked about a love triangle in Catching Fire, if that would be a thing. And he said, well, actually, yeah. I didn't think that there was that was evident enough in The Hunger Games by Gary Ross. So in Catching Fire, I've made it more apparent. His exact quote was, well, the question to Francis was, the first film skimped a little on showing us the strategy behind the Katniss Peeta love story. To which Francis replied, I felt the same. I felt the love story in general was a bit buried in the first one. I wanted to bring the love story to the surface in Catching Fire. And when I say love, I mean the triangle. So he specifically referenced the triangle on him on his own, which bothered a lot of fans. The top voted comment here on Hypeable says, I don't have a problem with the whole love triangle. I just hope they don't make it the sole point of the movie. Like Katniss's choice is more important than the rebellion or things like that. I don't think it will be that prominent, because you just look at the trailers, it's all about the rebellion
and they don't really need it, you know what I mean? It's popular enough where you don't need that, you know, type of the Twilight triangle.
But for some reason Francis thought there wasn't enough of it in the first one. So
well, I would agree with him, because I mean the books, they don't have necessarily a lot to do with relationships, but it is a good deal of how Katniss kind of deals with the situation and how she thinks. And so to like completely avoid it would be totally wrong. It would make sense to at least address the situation.
Yeah.
Because especially considering, you know, what happens to Peeta in the third book and how she's emotionally invested. So like, and that whole ordeal, like they would have to make it very clear that there's something there in order for that to make a connection with the audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, like in the first one, they jump back and show after Peeta and Katniss kiss, you know, they show Gale, you know,
yeah, for like 2 microseconds. Yeah.
But I'm just saying they're making, there's a thread there that they can, you know, keep pulling.
Yeah.
They didn't totally leave it out, which is kind of would be awkward if they jumped into it in the second one.
Mm-hmm. And then in a lighter Catching Fire story, Josh Hutcherson did a cover story for Out Magazine. Where he reiterates that, unfortunately, he is straight, but he leaves open the possibility of turning gay one day, which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
But then also he was asked about whether or not Katniss, Peeta, and Gale would solve their differences ever, to which Hutcherson said, well, somebody said to him, they should just have a threesome to work it out. And Josh replied, I know Peeta would be into it for sure. He's very sensitive, in touch with his emotions. I think it really might solve a lot of their problems. You know what? I'm going to pitch that idea. Let's make it a, what's it called when three people are in a relationship together? A triad? That'll go over well with middle America. End quote.
Oh, God.
So.
I actually, now every gay guy in the world is going to be like, oh, got to get Josh to fall in love with me.
He right. was throwing this reporter such a bone with that thing. Yeah. That was just like a softball.
Yeah, so fans, I mean, obviously nobody took him really seriously, but it's just a funny remark from him.
No, at least he's cool about, you know, a lot of this stuff. I like him. He seems like, you know, people kind of pick on him sometimes because he's like 4'2". But, he seems like actually a genuine person, and I've seen him in, you know,
there's nothing wrong with being short.
I just mean, usually it's like Gale, gigantic Gale, and then, you know,
yeah,
cats.
Mm-hmm. That never bothered me, his height. I don't know why this has become a thing. Like, I've seen comments like this as well, that he's short. I'm trying to think if I've seen him in person before. I guess I haven't, so I don't really know how short he actually looks, but in the movie, he looks fine.
Yeah, in the movie they do the right angles and he looks okay, but you can kind of tell like he's a little bit smaller, like especially, you know, I imagine we'll see it when Gale and him are around each other.
He's 5'6". Just looked it up.
Oh, so whatever.
So he's a little below average.
That's not short.
To Kyle, that's giant.
That is.
Kyle, how tall are you?
How tall are you?
5'2".
Aww.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really short if you meet him.
I like, totally I like to buff it up to 5'3".
Buff it up. And then there's... I wanted to talk about Catching Fire's first screenings. So we know that it opens November 22nd, but Lionsgate announced that they are putting tickets on sale for screenings as early as 8 p.m. on November 21st. And the reason I want to talk to you guys about this is because Hypeable Readers kind of inspired me. Somebody brought up the point that the 8 p.m. screenings kind of ruined the thrill of the midnight screening, because it used to be, up until like a year ago, you would go to a midnight screening. That was the earliest screening period. And then slowly 10 p.m. screenings started appearing. And now Catching Fire is doing 8 o'clock, which is very early. And it kind of, you know, the cool thing about midnight was you're waiting up late, the stroke of midnight. It's like, it's like the New Year's countdown. It's a new day.
You go to sleep during the day just so you can be awake at night.
Right. And then you're having fun with your friends all night waiting in line. And there's still going to be those line parties and whatnot for the 8 p.m. showings. But it scatters everybody out more now across the 8 p.m. and the 9 and the 10 and the midnight and the 12:30.
I think that's the biggest disappointment, is you're spreading out the fans and you're not getting that midnight experience anymore, because you can go from 8, 10, 12, you know.
Yeah.
The thing, and you're not like rushing to buy tickets, you know. I just feel like it's it removes a lot of the anticipation.
Mm-hmm. It's like the release date might as well be on the day before if you're going to show it at 8 p.m.
Yeah,
like,
that's the thing I used to think of, was I thought it was like by Hollywood law you couldn't watch a movie until 12:01 because like theaters wouldn't show it until 12:01, and then because it was, you know, that was the release date that they could show the film.
Well, the Lionsgate is choosing to do 8 o'clock. That's why these are happening at 8. But like you said, legally, I think they couldn't show them up until like a year ago, earlier than 12:01 a.m. And it also just like, you knew when you went to a midnight screening, you knew that only the diehard fans were in that screening, because they were the first to get tickets, and they were the ones who wanted to see it a minute past midnight, as early as possible.
And I think we care more about this because we are the Potter generation. So I don't think that people maybe even younger than us even care that much, because they're probably like, oh, at least I can go see it at 8 now. But like my 20-year-old self says, this kind of sucks. My 27-year-old self is like, this is kind of good, because now I don't have to stay up till 12 to watch a movie.
Do we know if... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Are they offering the midnight premiere?
I think so.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think I would rather actually just buy tickets in the midnight premiere then, and then screw the 8 o'clock premiere.
See, I wouldn't... I have tickets for an 8 o'clock thing that I'll talk about in a minute. But it just... But some people have wondered why they are doing this. And somebody suggested maybe it is because of that awful shooting that happened during The Dark Knight Rises. That was a midnight shooting back in July of last year. And that's actually right around the same time that these midnight releases started happening earlier. And the argument behind that is people think people may have a negative feeling towards midnight screenings now because of that shooting in Colorado that killed... It was numerous people.
I would be surprised if that was the main reason. I mean, maybe I'm out of tune, but I really haven't felt that whenever I've gone to midnight premieres, you know, the last year.
Yeah.
I really have. I've never even thought about, and I hate to say, I don't mean any disrespect to the victims, but I've never thought about that incident when I've gone to midnight premieres since then. Now, when I went and saw Batman again after it happened, I was definitely thinking about it. But luckily since then I haven't, you know, and people haven't mentioned it at midnight premieres, so I hope that's not the case, but obviously it could be.
My other theory is that this gives them a huge bump on the opening day numbers.
So from a
media standpoint, this is going to look really good when they are going to make a ton of money this opening night / midnight screening time frame.
They're basically just padding their numbers. And no one's going to really know except for us and insiders, you know, because no one else, you know, knows how it works.
It's also like it's like when they move a movie to a Wednesday during the summer, like they did for Harry Potter.
Exactly.
Because then it's a 5-day opening weekend. It's a huge number. So,
or like a holiday, when they do the holiday openings. And stuff.
Yeah.
Just padding their numbers for that opening weekend.
And like Josh said, you get a little older, you don't always want to do these midnight things. I mean, as somebody who gets up at 5 a.m., I greatly appreciate an 8 o'clock screening.
Yeah, I mean, I feel totally different now than I did when I was 20, you know, going to Harry Potter. I would never want to go, you know, earlier when I was younger. But now I'm like, it's actually better because I can enjoy the movie. I'm not passing out, you know.
Right, right. Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Meanwhile, I'm just enjoying the whole thing at midnight and partying and then going to a club afterwards, you know, whatever.
Andrew and I are old.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are.
Get off our lawn, our 8 o'clock lawn. Leave us alone.
Going at 8.
Walkers only at the 8 p.m. screenings. I mentioned that a ticket I got, that there is a movie theater chain here in Los Angeles called Arclight Movie Theaters, and they are doing what they're calling Capital Bashes. It's a $65 ticket, but you get to see the movie at 8 o'clock, and at 2 hours earlier at 6 p.m., they are having a party in their movie theater with free unlimited food and alcohol. Yo,
what?
So me and my friends jumped on this, and there's going to be costume contests. And
that's cool.
Yeah, they have a really cool...
I was
cool...
about to make fun of you for spending $65 on a ticket, but now I just want to go there.
No, the free food and drinks
nice
sold me.
Drink $65 worth of alcohol.
Oh, that takes definitely. Like 5 minutes.
Definitely. Yeah. L.A. prices, yeah.
Yeah, L.A. prices, yeah.
And it's reserved seating, so you don't have to, like... So you can walk in 1 minute before the movie starts and get your seat that you selected. So it's me and my friends are really excited about that. Yeah,
especially if you have like a group of people, you know you can get
exactly
together.
Yeah, it's four of us going, so it'll be a good time.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on. Oh, also with Catching Fire, the soundtrack was revealed, not released, but we now know all the songs and artists. It has a really good lineup. The songs released so far are Atlas by Coldplay. These are all new songs, by the way. We Remain by Christina Aguilera. And there's a song by the Lumineers called Gale Song. And it's not officially released, but they actually performed it at a concert recently, and you can watch it on YouTube. And Lights by Fantagram. That one you can get by purchasing your Catching Fire tickets now. But then other artists on the soundtrack include Lorde, who is incredibly popular right now, Imagine Dragons, Of Monsters and Men, and Ellie Goulding. So
this soundtrack is amazing.
Yeah, it really is. I'm so excited for Lorde's song and Ellie Goulding's song.
I'm excited for Lorde and Imagine Dragons. My two favorites.
Mm-hmm. So they did a really good job with this. And I mean, with the Twilight franchise, the soundtracks are always so huge. And they really noticed that because this is a great lineup. And naturally, all these artists want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
Also, Elastic Heart has been released as well. That's by Sia featuring The Weeknd and Diplo. And finally... As we look ahead into what's coming up over the next couple of weeks in terms of the release schedule, Allegiant, the third book in the Divergent trilogy, the third and final book, is going to be released October 22nd. We received this interesting statistic from Amazon. Allegiant is outselling Mockingjay nearly 5-1.
Holy crap.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was so surprised by this. Now as I wrote this story, I didn't really know what to credit that to other than people just really liking the book more. But some of our readers pointed out the fact that the Divergent movie is already getting a lot of promotion, which probably encouraging new people to read the books and to get excited for book three. Whereas when the final Hunger Games book was coming out, there was no movie in sight, or it may have been, but it was still a long way away. So Divergent may be benefiting from the release of Allegiant, may be benefiting from the movie release of Divergent this March.
I have a lot of friends actually that picked up the Divergent book after seeing the trailer, and they're like, I have no idea what this is about, but it looks kind of cool, so I'll read it. So I feel like a lot of people are doing that.
I still have reservations about the movie being a big hit. I want it to be, but I don't know.
No, I'm on the same page. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be as gigantic as Hunger Games like they want it to be.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
I think it's unlikely. I think Jennifer Lawrence has a lot to do with these films being popular.
Mm-hmm. It is that time where we should see another thing exploding. So
yeah,
it could be Divergent. I could see it being as popular as, what can we compare it to? Like a certain franchise.
It drops off so quick though when you go from like Potter and Hunger Games. It like drops off big, you know, like popularity wise, or what's succeeded in the film world compared to books. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I can't think of a comparison right now, but
yeah, neither can I.
Here's hoping it'll be good. Also, on the upcoming release calendar, The Walking Dead premieres this Sunday. Do you guys watch that?
Yes.
Are you excited?
I actually wasn't originally a Walking Dead fan. My brother convinced me after weeks of torture to watch it. And I finally watched it and ended up watching, you know, all the seasons in a week. And I'm excited, but not as excited as I was for Breaking Bad to come back. So I don't, it's kind of like, you know, a little notch lower than that.
Mm-hmm. I'm not totally excited for some reason. I'm not sure why, but I'm going to watch it. I do love
those episodes.
Show
get a little repetitive. You know what I mean? Yeah. They have like, oh, we're keeping them out of the gate again. Oh, we're doing the same thing this week.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And they're kind of running out of people that I care about that are still alive.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know how many, you know, you can't kill Rick because he's kind of the, you know, main point of the story.
Right.
Unless you're, you know, unless they switch over to Game of Thrones style where everyone is expendable.
I know that I'll definitely be sticking with the whole season, but I just hope they step it up a little bit.
I think they will. I think this will be this season will be a change for some reason.
Okay.
Because from the previews, it seemed like they're going to have to leave the jail, which will open up tons of, you know, stories because they've been stuck in that jail for what, a season and a half, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like getting out of there will be, will allow us to like see some new, you know, at least see some new places, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, our movie writer Chelsea came up with a fall movie guide, 20 films we've been waiting to see this year. So we thought we could mention a couple of these. First of all, Gravity came out. Very good movie.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Oh, yeah.
It's made over $100 million now, which was well beyond expectations, I think.
Yep.
So that was great. But then there's a bunch of movies coming out over the next few months, including Thor: The Dark World. Is that going to be good, Josh?
It looks awesome compared to I didn't really love the first one. It was almost too comical for me. but now Alan Taylor, one of the directors of Game of Thrones, is the director for Thor 2. So we're going to see a lot darker. I've mentioned this in a lot of my articles. You know, we're going to see a lot darker, you know, content. And I think Natalie Portman will be kind of maybe a bigger part of this. And everyone loves Loki. So, you know, you can't give up Tom Hiddleston for anything. Mm-hmm. So I think people will be surprised by how much better this one is than the first one.
Okay. And then we will also have Ender's Game coming out on November 1st. The Book Thief, that's a book-to-film adaptation, getting a lot of people excited. That'll be coming out November 15th. And, of course, we have films like Catching Fire and the Walt Disney movie I'm excited for, Saving Mr. Banks.
I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, with Tom Hanks as Walt Disney. Yeah. That looks
wondering if they're going to make it, because like in the true story, like what actually happened is like she hated everything and then she never talked to Disney again. She was like, I refuse to do anything with you. And I'm so, but it looks like the trailer is making it look like she likes what he does at the end.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, whatever.
When the first trailer came out, one of the real people actually slammed the movie, saying this isn't accurate at all.
That happens a lot.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a movie, it's a movie. It's based on a true story loosely. Yeah. Speaking of being based on a true story, I saw another movie that's not listed in this list. 12 Years a Slave. It's got a big cast, big name actors, Paul Giamatti, Brad Pitt. And it was really good, really painful to watch, but really good. So I recommend that.
How was it painful?
Well, it's based on the story of a slave who had been freed, but then gets kidnapped and forced to become a slave again. And there are a few scenes in which he is a slave that are just so brutal to watch. They really draw the scene out. I think these particular scenes out to make the viewer just like suffer with the character. Oh man, it was hard. I left that theater like depressed with everybody else. I mean, it has a good ending, but the vibe I got from everybody after the movie was just like, well, that was depressing.
Oh, sounds like my type of movie.
Yeah. Yeah, not a fun Friday movie, but definitely a good movie.
Speaking of true stories, Captain Phillips comes out today with Tom Hanks, which is a true story based on a captain whose ship gets taken over by pirates. And so if you don't know that, if you didn't watch that when it came out, when the true story, you know, happened a few years ago, definitely check that out today.
Yeah, we have a review going up on Hyperwall very soon, actually.
Yeah, I've heard it's very good.
And then three other movies worth mentioning. Hobbit comes out December 13th. American Hustle comes out the same day. And then a week later, on December 20th, Anchorman 2 comes out.
So excited.
Yes.
Those commercials with Ron Burgundy and the car are
incredible. Yeah. They are hilarious. I'm still laughing about them. Like, every once in a while, I think about that gum one. Gum for days! LOL.
Or when he kicks the dancers off.
Or when he can't find the exit where the curtains are.
Yeah.
He's so like, good. I know it's just a curtain, but I can't find my way out.
Yeah, so good. All right, well, I think that wraps up the show. Let's do a couple recommendations before we say goodbye. I am going to recommend a book that Merrima actually reviewed on Hypeable. It's called Fangirl, and I'm in the middle of reading this right now, but it's a story about a girl who writes fan fiction and is really, really obsessed about this particular book series, which I think it's sort of in the same vein as Harry Potter. It must have been inspired by Harry Potter. But she writes fan fiction and she goes off to college and it's a new world for her. So she's finding a balance between a newfound social life and sticking with her fangirl roots. So I'm reading it right now. It's actually really good. So I would recommend that. It's by Rainbow Rowell. I think we even have an interview with her.
Rowell?
Rowell, is that it?
I think so.
Is it Rowling? J.K. Rowling?
Don't ask me. I always screw it up.
See, I say Roll because I've been trained to say J.K. Rowling.
That same here.
So you would call her Rainbow Rowell. But you may be right because it's R-O-W-E-L-L. So, how about you guys? What do you have to recommend this week?
I actually just finished Ender's Game, the book. Oh, cool. So I'll go ahead and recommend that. It's really interesting. The plot twist at the end kind of comes out of nowhere and then makes you go, wait, what? So I'm really curious as to if the movie's going to go about the same way. So it's a good book.
Did you read it in anticipation of the movie?
I actually started it like 6 months ago.
okay.
And it took me a while to finish it.
Nice.
But I read it because I've always wanted to read it anyway. So.
Okay. And Josh.
I'm recommending a book by Dan Brown. He was the author of The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons. Both of those have been adaptations to film with Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. This May he released a book called Inferno, which is really good. And what's great about it is they're already they've set up to adapt it to film with Tom Hanks again as the lead character Robert Langdon, and that'll be coming out in December 18th. December 18th, 2015. But go ahead and get the book out of the way so you can watch the film when it comes out.
Nice. Now, is it the same exact formula as all of his other Robert Langdon books?
Kind of, but it's a good book. I liked it. If you like The Da Vinci Code, you'll probably like this.
Okay, I think I might pick that up.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to Hype Episode 15. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Tarek Kyle.
And I'm Josh Neely.
We'll see everybody next time for Episode 16. Goodbye.
Goodbye, guys.